The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hendra, and this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, we did it! Dun-dun-dun!
Did what?
150 episodes. This is our 150th episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour. Congratulations!
150 episodes? Christ, you think we'd be rich by now?
Tony, we're rich in the knowledge that we've persisted, that we've made 150 great shows.
I don't know. 150?
140?
Lower.
130?
Lower.
Come on. 110?
Out of 150? Yeah, I guess that sounds about right. And yes, I'm proud of, 93 of those. But still, have we made a difference in the world?
Hard work is its own reward.
Oh, don't make me throw up. Not you. Now you're buying into that propagandist malarkey? The religious drivel of the Church of 1% Capitalism spewed by the high priests of oppression and exploitation? You make me sick.
See? Didn't that feel good?
Yeah. Actually did. Not as good as money, but,
Tony?
You know. Okay, it felt great. Let's do some more.
150 more?
Well, let's start with one. One more episode of the Final,
Final Edition Radio Hour.
Man on the street! 14-year-old Ahmed Mohammed in Irving, Texas, was handcuffed and arrested for bringing a homemade clock to school to impress his engineering teacher. The Final Edition asked the man on the street, what do you think?
So I guess he's definitely not bringing that pressure cooker to home ec.
This kid had an engineering teacher?
I hear the clock took a chachin and kept on gachachama.
He should have brought in the vibrator he made.
Excuse me, I think I forgot which bus I'm supposed to get on.
Shut up!
Well, I'm the Irving they named Irving, Texas after, and I'm confused.
They're just a bunch of clock suckers.
So afterwards, they took the clock and a student got on top of it and shot 15 people.
This is Politics, and this week on This is Politics, Senator Bernie Sanders reaches out for new voters, bringing his presidential campaign to a Nazi rally in Westland, Michigan.
I know that we have areas where we don't agree, such as my very existence and the existence of my family. But I also know we have areas in which we do agree, such as clean energy and the music of Richard Wagner. And maybe, just maybe, we can work on those mutual goals.
And Sanders received surprisingly warm reactions.
I would never vote for him, of course, but the Jew makes some good points.
Then it was off to a mental hospital in upstate New York where Sanders spoke to a group of drooling schizophrenics.
You believe you can explode people's faces by looking at them. I believe America's wealth gap is unsustainable. We both believe the FBI is spying on us. Let's work together.
And a quick stop at a Greek cemetery in Colma, California.
I know that most of you are dead. Most, but maybe not all. And if we pull together, we can solve the problems of this country.
Next week, Sanders spearheads a voter registration drive in North Korea.
For those of you who missed the Miss America pageant, the Final Audition Radio Hour presents an excerpt from the questions and answers segment featuring Miss Alabama.
According to a poll released this week, Donald Trump is leading Republican candidates by 32% of the votes. Why do you think he's leading by such an overwhelming margin?
Well, I think it's because he's an asshole, and he says what's on a lot of assholes' minds, But I think the Republican Party should be absolutely terrified of all the attention he has taken away from more qualified assholes like Jeb Bush and Chris Christie.
Well, aren't they all just as bad?
Well, Trump is the worst because he's an entertainment asshole.
Oh, an asshole-tainer.
Right. Although Celebrity Apprentice is now being hosted by Arnold Schwarzenegger, that's gotta hurt. Wearing a hat that says Make America Great Again while your show is taken over by a foreigner?
Now, if for any reason Trump is unable to fulfill his duties as President of the United States, who should be first runner-up?
Christie, Jeb, they can step in.
Well, you know that's not the way it works.
If we actually elect that douchebag, how things work is going to be the least of our problems.
Demonstrators are converging on Planned Parenthoods across the country to protest against the clinic's practice of free cancer screenings. Our Richard Hertz has that story in downtown St. Louis.
Pro-life demonstrators are blocking the doorway at Planned Parenthood's cervical and ovarian cancer screening services. With me is protest organizer Carol Burford. Carol, why cancer screening?
Because cancer is not a choice. It's a living, growing thing, and God has blessed your body with it. Hang on a second. This is a picture of your unborn cancer.
Oh, shit, I got cancer?
For some, the struggle is personal. One woman who had a tumor removed when she was in college says she now regrets it.
My cancer would be 17 years old now. It would be going to the prom.
But a doctor inside the clinic says he just wants to prevent back alley chemo.
We're not anti-cancer. We just let women choose whether to keep their cancer.
But Burford says every cancer has a right to live.
Every tumor would develop into a viable cancer baby. And every cancer baby could grow up to be Jesus Christ or Tom Cruise. A lot of famous people started out as cancer.
This is Richard Hertz for the Final Edition.
This summer, from the studio that brought you The Little Mermaid and Cinderella, comes an all-new Disney princess.
I promise I will do everything I can to make my people happy. Death to America!
Yay!
Meet Princess Isis, Disney's strongest female character to date.
Please don't kill me, Princess. I have four children. One of them is sick. If you let me live, I'll be your slave forever.
But I want to chop your head off, and I want to do it now! Hi-ya!
And for the most romantic story of the season.
Now that's no way to chop someone's head off!
Like you could do better.
You bet I could. I'm Prince Isis, by the way.
Prince Isis? You must be my long-lost brother from another mother.
Then why have I never seen your beautiful prepubescent face before?
Maybe it's because you've been gone for so many years and I'm only 7 years old.
Maybe. Now, what would a prince like me have to do to win your heart and brutally take your virginity?
Talk to father, of course.
Absolutely not. I forbid it.
But father, he's my own blood.
Yeah, yes, but who am I supposed to lie with whilst you're gone?
Oh, my prince, what are we to do?
Don't worry, princess. I'll find a way. I can show you the world. Bleeding, miserable madness. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your rights subside? I can open your thighs, bend you over and over, and as always, I'll beat you like a spoiled child bride. A whole new world!
A whole new world!
Where no Jews are.
Yeah, babe, I'm almost done.
Where are you? Christ, hurry up!
I'm at the CVS, okay? I'm next in line. There's not a single actual cashier in the store. All they have is those stupid self-checkout machines.
Did you get the tampons, Tampax Super Plus?
Yes, I'm not an idiot. You know what else I got you? Pepperidge Farm Mint Milano cookies and a big pint of Ben & Jerry's Chunky Monkey.
Oh, baby, you're so sweet. But hurry up, okay?
I'm at the checkout now. Okay.
If you have your extra care card, please scan it now.
Fuck your extra care card, bitch.
To start, simply begin scanning your items and follow the system prompts.
Yeah. Here we go.
One package of Tampax Super Plus tampons for heavy flow days.
What the fuck? Did you hear that?
What's wrong now?
It said I was buying tampons out loud. It never worked like that before. Now everybody in line is looking at me.
Nobody thinks they're for you, Arthur. Just buy them, okay?
I am. Here, let me scan your Mint Milanos.
One package of condoms for children. Cherry flavor.
Oh, come on!
What? Whoa! That's not what they are!
What's the holdup? Get the stuff and go.
Jesus, it's fucking... Forget it. I'll just scan the ice cream.
One 20-ounce package of faggot powder.
Oh, come on! Go back to Alabama!
It's not faggot powder! I don't even know what that is!
What the fuck are you doing? Just buy the shit!
I'm trying! Jesus!
Transaction invalid. Please place your dick in the scanning tray.
Ow! It wants me to put my dick on the scanner!
Well, fucking do it! Christ, if I had a dick, I'd scan it for you.
I'm not gonna pull my dick out. There are people in line behind me.
Can they see your dick?
No.
Then just say you're not going to do it and do it, like, discreetly.
Whatever. I most certainly will not put my dick in the scanning tray. Okay, here goes.
Thank you for putting your dick in the scanning tray. One moment, please.
Oh, man!
Arthur, leave it there until the transaction clears.
Daddy likes the scanning tray, doesn't he?
No! Shut up and scan!
Please wait. Assistance is on the way.
What? No! I don't want...
Hello, sir. I'm the night manager. I can help you with a... Oh, my God. Why is your penis on the scanning machine?
It told me to put it there.
Your penis told you to put it there?
No, the machine. It's acting weird. See these cookies? It said they were condoms for children.
Oh, wait a minute. You disguise condoms in a cookie package to lure children?
No. It's the machine. See this? It said it was faggot powder. That's not even a real thing.
So you made up something you call faggot powder? What kind of sick, twisted mind...
No, it's real!
If faggot powder is real?
No, I mean the machine created it. Oh, for Christ's sake, how much do I owe? Here's 60 bucks in cash. Just take it and give me these tampons. I'm out of here.
Keep away from my kids, all right?
Please remove all bagged items. Thank you for shopping at CVS.
This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour has been brought to you by Baby's Little Rubbers, candy-flavored condoms from Fisher-Price, and by Faggot Powder. Look for the faggot on the box.
Look for the faggot on the box!
And many more.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Pull up your pants, we're back! It's the Final Edition Radio Hour!
A revolution for daily life. A robot for the home.
I am Meebo.
Meebo.
A socialized robot that learns everything about you.
I found more stuff porn on the internet. The kind you like. Would you like a towel?
Meebo.
No judgments.
You've been staring at a teenage girl on Facebook for 45 minutes. Would you like me to bookmark that page?
Meebo.
No problems.
I see you're shooting up heroin. Should I block your mother's phone calls?
Yes, please.
Meebo.
No kidding.
Meebo, where can I hide a body? A small body.
Searching.
Just a path where you want to go.
I found more comparisons between you and Heinrich Himmler. Should I clear your schedule?
Meebo.
And now here's Sam Waterston with some important information you'll want to pay close attention to.
Hello, this is Sam Waterston for TD Ameritrade. We used to be TJ Waterhouse. And before that, I was Sam Waterston for the History Channel's Time Lab 2000. But most of you may know me as Head District Attorney Jack McCoy on NBC's award-winning drama, Law and Order. However, did you know my career was in serious trouble until an advantageous meeting with Robert Redford on the set of the film The Great Gatsby? The scene where I was supposed to mouth-kiss Bruce Dern was about to be filmed, and I became very self-conscious about my breath. Bobby Redford, seeing my discomfort, took me aside to offer me admittance.
Mr. Waterston, excuse me for interrupting, but can you stick to the subject of investing?
Not only did the mint alleviate my chronic halitosis, but it also became stuck in the back of my throat, thereby facilitating the trademark speaking pattern that has propelled me to start up today. Yes, that scene was cut from the film. But to this day, I never refuse a mint, nor a deep soul kiss from Bruce Dern.
Mr. Waterston?
Remember, TD Ameritrade offers you this bargaining demand.
What?
Remember, TD Ameritrade offers you the support you need to make smart investments. Shut it!
That was completely unintelligible.
This has been Sam Waterston for Time Lab 2000.
Welcome back to the Bob Scott Show. Substituting for Bob Scott is God.
Line 5, you're on the air with God. This is Robert in Covington, Kentucky. Is that right?
Why, yes, Lord, it is.
Hi, Robert. My condolences about your wife.
What are you talking about? She's sitting here right next to me.
Oh, right. Today's not Tuesday.
Huh? Oh, honey!
Line 6, you're on the air with God.
I would like to thank you, Lord, for I have undergone the amazing miracle of being born again.
Well, that's more of a psychological thing than a miracle. Millions of people are born again.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're talking religiously. I'm talking biologically. You see, I was reinserted into the womb and born again. Of course, we didn't have an umbilical cord at the time, so we had to use an old bungee cord.
We return after the break to the Bob Scott Show, hosted by God.
Now a dinner party where the guests say their Facebook statuses and the host says what he thinks of those statuses.
OMG, check out this pasta with awesome sauce.
Please don't take a picture of your food. No one cares.
Ooh, great shot. Looks yummy.
So jealous.
Why are you enabling this?
The Confederate flag needs to be taken down now.
I agree.
Slavery is over. Take the Confederate flag down now.
Yes.
The Confederate flag needs to be taken down now. Watch this video.
Okay, got it. You all agree. Well done. Move on.
Those black guys were up to something. That's why they got shot.
Oh, wow. We just met. I didn't know you thought that way. Get out.
It's the first day of middle school for my wonderful...
Nobody cares.
I made my hubby, after an amazing day, the most delicious dessert to celebrate the 5th anniversary of finding my soulmate.
Why don't you tell him? Why do I need to know that?
Oh, I'm so lucky. My soulmate, I love you more than ever.
You live with each other. Just tell each other.
Oh my God, conversation with my son. Me, clean up your room. Son, I can't. Me, why, son? It smells like asparagus in there. I hate asparagus.
Only funny to you and your parents.
This rabbit was about to get eaten by a lion. You'll never believe what happens next.
I think I will. But all right, I'll look at it later.
Obama works for ISIS.
I told you to leave. How did you get back in?
Still friends with her. You'll still get my comments.
You ruined my days.
What Batman villain are you?
All right, I'm in. I hope it's the Joker.
So funny, my husband is the Joker. I bought him Batman comics for his birthday.
Nobody cares, unless it's funny. Be funny!
And now from the National Lampoon Archives, Billy Barty going down on Little Lotta.
Open your piss slaps, bitch! I'm diving in!
Okay, how many of you have ever been in a focus group before?
Nope.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. For those of you that have not, this is simply a sort of hands-on, up-close-and-personal, live consumer questionnaire. We ask you questions about a product, and through you, the consumer, we find out how better to market it. Now, let's all get to know each other a little by going around the room, giving the last four digits of our Social Security number and our gross annual income. Okay, let's start with you.
2844-35,000.
2845-35K.
2846. You know, I'm a little uncomfortable divulging my income in front of a room full of strangers.
I told mine.
Come on, we all did it.
Okay.
We all did.
$34,000.
Okay. And I'm 6661, 200,000. Good to meet you. Who can tell me what this is?
It's a jar of steak sauce.
Good. Now, you all watch the news, right? Can I just ask you for a few adjectives?
You mean like
descriptive words?
Oh, yeah.
Words that describe them.
Yeah, right. Like box.
Okay.
Yeah, cool.
And that you apply these words to the news, okay? Just the first thing that pops into your head, okay?
Information.
Information, good.
Knowledge.
Good.
Television.
Excellent. 2846.
Information.
Good. 2844.
Five.
Pardon?
52845.
Oh, of course. 2845. Sorry.
Huh?
Anything else the world news brings to mind? Anything at all?
Steak sauce?
No. That's very good. You're laughing, but that's great. Perfect. Okay, let me write that down. Excellent. Okay. Now, what's your favorite kind of news?
Kind of news?
Yeah, you know, you like murder and rape, political sex scandals, natural disasters, infant fatalities.
Well, you know, I like the human interest, like that poor Hispanic boy last night that's going to college or something.
Mm-hmm, good.
It's very informational how when a guy goes in and shoots a lot of people at once, like in a fast food place or something, you know.
Yeah.
Tragic.
Oh, and rape. Definitely rape.
Yeah, I like rape.
Good. Very good. Okay, now a psychopathic maniac has five hostages at gunpoint at a Christian radio station. The SWAT team is at the scene, and the hostage negotiator is getting nowhere. Now, very briefly, I want you all to write down how you think the scenario would end. And when you get through, I want you all to look at these steak sauce labels and write down which one you think is sexier. Okay? I'll give you a minute.
Damn, I know this.
Okay, 2844, we're going to start with you.
Okay. I think someone named Trent would overpower him and save everyone, but be fatally wounded in the attempt. And I like the one with the bull.
Okay, 2846?
Well, I mean, hers was better than mine, but I just said that SWAT got him, and I really like the one with the guy in the chaps.
That's stupid. He'd kill everyone then turn the gun on himself.
Hey, does anybody smell gas?
I like the one with the Tijuana Donkey show.
Good. Good. Okay, they're out. Bring in the bags.
Arr, they don't like it when I roll my R's. Hear if I do it more. Next on the final edition.
Okay, I think you should do one of these.
What?
I'm just
you don't improvise, that you're telling me?
No, I can't improvise this. There's not enough substance to get my teeth into.
After these messages, the final edition radio hour will go to pi squared.
We will be right back after this.
Yeah, do something French. Imagine drinking wine.
Just did.
We'll be back to discuss on the final edition radio hour.
Okay, these are incomprehensible. That's enough.
We'll be back soon with more of the final edition radio hour.
Hi, I'm Tony Hendra. Welcome back to the final edition radio hour. I'm very honored in this week's show to present the first of a three-part interview with Lewis Lapham, the legendary editor of Harper's Magazine and currently editor-in-chief of the extraordinary Lapham's Quarterly. You will not regret Googling Lapham's Quarterly and becoming a subscriber, for its intent is to sublimely subvert pretty much everything Google holds dear. I asked Lewis to share his thoughts on the subject of satire and its role, both currently and historically, in what we laughingly refer to as our democracy. Okay, so I'm speaking with Lewis Lapham, who is the editor-in-chief of Lapham's Quarterly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And who was for almost 30 years the editor of Harper's Magazine, one of the nation's most respected organs of intelligent dissent, and possibly one of the most distinguished, if not the most distinguished, political and social essayist in the writing in the United States at the present time. Would you say those were accurate descriptors?
I would say it was a little over the top, but I'm delighted with it.
Well, indeed. And I'm delighted to be here. But I'm also fascinated that given these extraordinary credentials, as his co-writer on his memoir organized a tribute to George Carlin a year after his death, because we had talked about George Carlin in the past, I asked you to do one of the tributes. You did an extraordinary tribute to him, which was shorter and finer than any other tribute, even though there were tributes from stars like Ben Stiller, Whoopi Goldberg, Louis C.K., and many others. So I wanted to get the conversation going on what it was or what it is about George that prompted you to actually say things like, George Carlin is in the tradition of Ambrose Bierce, H.L. Mencken, Philip Wiley, Sinclair Lewis, Terry Southern, Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, Kurt Vonnegut, and Tom Paine. And the burden, I think, of your appreciation of George was that he stood up and, thinking out loud, proposed that he did not agree with the official version.
Yes. I mean, he did it very well. He did it in language that, like Paine's and like Twain's, was easy to understand. It wasn't about himself. He was not trying to show off or in any way be smarter than anybody else in the room. And he wasn't doing it to vengefully or snarkily or ironically. He was doing it passionately and honestly, and because it was something that these were sores in the body politic that he clearly saw. Twain used to think of satire as a kind of refining fire to burn away the hospitality tents of cant under which the society is blissfully and happily content to live most of the time. The Archibald MacLeish was himself a fine poet, at one time a librarian of Congress. I can't remember the exact quote, but his point was that dissenting opinion was when somebody broke loose momentarily from the herd and managed to say what he or she himself thought, had seen, understood, guessed at, but was true to his own or her own observation. Twain played for laughs. Laughs, he thought, were the great healing, cauterizing balm to heal the wounds that he knew everybody, man, woman, or child, in his audience had come up against in the course of living in what was, in Twain's mind, in the late 19th century, a truly brutal society. He once said that a society that is the sum of its vanity and greed is not a society at all. It is a state of war. And Carlin, I think, saw it somewhat the same way. And he was, as was Twain, a humanist, an idealist. He was not a cynic, at least as I understood him. I didn't think Twain was a cynic. I certainly didn't think Paine was a cynic, and Vonnegut was not a cynic.
Absolutely not, no.
And and that was the strength of Carlin's satire, and that's why people wanted to listen to and were heartened by what he said, I think. Not amused, not condescending.
Right.
But genuinely heartened. And here's a man who's trying to, you know, speak to the true terms of the contract under which we happen to be living.
Right. One of the things you said, actually, was that he sent his humor on a moral errand.
Yes, he did.
Which I think is a Twainism, is it not?
Yes. Well, that's, I also apply right. that to Twain. That's right. my phrase.
That's your
Twain's.
Phrase.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
That's okay.
No, but that's a wonderful way to describe George. And another thing you said, which I think was very much in the front of George's mind at all times, was that he wanted to preserve his fellow American from becoming shriveled sheep.
Right. That's a Twain that I... That's yeah. a phrase I borrowed from Twain. Shriveled sheep was one of his phrases, and the...
There's another one, too, I noticed in the autobiography, where he says, we are discreet sheep.
Yeah.
We look to see where the drove is going, and then we follow the drove.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Most people do that. I mean, it's...
Right, but his point was more generous than simply demeaning people. It was that people actually know the truth privately, but they don't express it.
Right.
Because the drove doesn't express it.
And to hear it expressed publicly is heartening. It makes you think, well, I'm not alone in this.
Right, yeah. But it's threatening to those who want you to remain sheep.
Yes, and I think that's... I mean, I know that Twain drew big audiences. How big were the audiences that Carlin...
Oh, it was sizable. I mean, he would play... His average was probably between 1,200 and 1,500 seats.
Well, you see, that's good. I mean, it's... Because we're not talking with about mass entertainment. I mean, I don't think satire works as mass entertainment because...
It's too disturbing.
It's too
yeah.
threatening.
Yeah.
People go to the movies or people go to the Broadway shows because they want to escape or they want to be lulled into some sort of... complacent and content. You know, sheep, so the sheep may safely graze.
Oh, getting into Bach now.
And you can't safely graze on right. the satire of Carlin.
Right.
Or Twain.
Or Twain.
Or
yeah.
so on.
Yes. I mean, actually, I think one of the most interesting things that you also said was that he performed live. I mean, he did his HBO yeah. specials, but he did them once every 2 years. And that right. was... He described that as an advertisement for himself.
Right.
But what he really did was build a vast audience, 1,200 or 1,500 at a time, of living, breathing human beings who were actually listening to his words.
Right.
Not listening
yes.
to a picture of his words.
Yeah.
And I think that is where, as you put it, he provided a counterpoint to the tragedy yeah. of the human predicament.
And I think that's why satire is better suited to the stage or to the lecture. Twain used to do it live, too. As you know, he was a constant figure, a leading figure on the American lecture circuit in the late 19th century, which was a big and, I mean, ongoing means of education and entertainment everywhere in the country. And he also lectured in Australia, in India, in Germany, and England.
In India, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think it needs a live audience. I think it's very hard to make satire work on television because it has to be cut to time. And, you know, you have, I don't know, whatever it is, 12, 8, 13 minutes, and then you cut to a car commercial or a beer commercial, which is the exact antithesis of humane expression. I mean, and the trouble with society as a whole is that most of our language is the language of advertising. It's the mm-hmm. language of the political
yes.
campaigns.
Indeed.
It's the average. It's the 15,000 ads we see every day, you know, on billboards, in the back of taxis, in magazines, you know, in elevators. The language of advertising is really debilitating.
if the attitude is one of basically a pleading. It's asking you or trying to convince you to buy something. I mean,
right,
sure. It's
yeah.
that is the antithesis of satire, which is certainly not pleading with you, telling you the truth.
Right.
Or truth telling.
It's giving you something. It's not trying to scrunch something out of you.
So you would, but I think at the end of your wonderful analysis of his autobiography, you say this. We'll come back to Twain, I think, several times, but you say, since we're talking about this, you've made a great case for Twain not simply being
a sort of folksy folklorist,
right,
which is the kind of niche that, as you said, the reviewers of his autobiography when it came out at the New York Times and the New Yorker chose to see him as an amiable after-dinner speaker, a man, right, who told funny stories and,
yeah,
smoked cigars and wore a white suit, and that he was, in fact, far more, as one of his executives put it, generous, intuitive, and sympathetic, but undiluted, merciless, and final as well.
Right.
So then you say, as your envoi to the review, you say, our contemporary brigade of satirists doesn't play with fire. It doesn't play with what Twain called painted fire, right?
That's correct.
Doesn't play with fire. The heavy calibers of Twain's humor have gone missing from our news and entertainment media because the audiences made for television don't look with favor upon the kind of jokes that cast doubt on the guarantee of happiness and the promise of redemption. Taught to believe that democracy is something quiet, orderly, and safe, a peaceful idea supportive of think tank viewings with alarm, and the keeping of pets as fragrant as Alan Greenspan and General David Petraeus, they prefer the safer forms of satire fit for privileged and frightened children. Twain was an adult.
I think that's a pretty good end to that piece. Whatever, I wrote that 3 or 4 years ago, but
right,
I would still stand behind every word of that.
So you wouldn't see this sort of supposed exemplars of modern satire like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert as satirists, or would you see them as something more diluted, or would you see them as not satirists at all?
Well, I can't really answer that question because I have never paid much attention, and I should have, I guess, to The Daily Show. And so I've only seen Stewart, you know, maybe 5 or 10 times, and same thing's true of Colbert. My sense of satire gone weak in the knees is more along the lines of somebody like Bill Maher, who I've seen a couple of times, and simply see him as a front man for the established order.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
really? I think that would be most irritating to Bill Maher. Well,
I don't know Bill Maher, but, so. I mean, he did make a good point, I think, when he said that you could say anything you wanted about the pilots that flew the planes into the trade towers, but you could not say that they were cowards. And for that, he was severely punished by the authorities. I think they took him off the air for a couple of weeks.
Yes, indeed.
But he was right about that. And so maybe I'm doing him a disservice, too. But too often, when I see what passes for satire, I think it's a way of letting the audience gently off the hook. In other words, okay, we see through the screen of lies. We can distinguish appearance from reality. We know that we are governed by fools and led to our deaths by pompous ideologues along the lines of Dick Cheney or Paul Wolfowitz and so on. I mean, most of the establishment in Washington and many of the better-known columnists for the major newspapers. But okay, all of us here, you know, watching Stewart or watching Colbert, watching Maher, okay, we're in on the joke, and good for us. And that's as far as it has to go. I guess that's heartening, but there's not enough edge in it to make it really heartening, I don't think.
Well, I would say that one of the key points, even of what passes for the strongest satire on television, or even the strongest satire in the comedy clubs, is that it's almost always about individual politicians or individuals on television in some way, pundits or writers. It's never about the system itself. It never calls into question the underlying principles of the system exactly, or exposes exactly what the system is, which, as you say, this is not a democracy, it's a state of war. And it's even pretty obvious from the people strutting around the countryside with pistols strapped to their hips that it is indeed a sort of slow motion civil war that we're in at the moment. But no one, even Jon Stewart and Colbert, will not come out and say things like that.
Yes, they pick easy targets.
Right, Fox News, for example.
In other words, they don't pick on Jamie Dimon, let's say,
mm-hmm,
and Chase Bank.
Indeed. The Final Edition does, but
they don't pick on, you know, when Kissinger was in power, they don't pick on Kissinger. But it's not just calling him a war criminal. The more damaging way to approach Kissinger would be to compare him inaccurately to a hairdresser. In other words, here we have an American establishment that is, by and large, poorly educated, doesn't speak languages, knows very little of history, is easily fooled by somebody like Kissinger, who can present them with a bespoke set of opinions. Kissinger kind of pretends that he's essentially the avatar, reborn incarnation of Metternich, temporarily loaned from Congress of Vienna.
That's right, the balance of power. He talks about the balance of power. Right?
And you really have to think of him in terms of fashion designer who's providing fashionable opinions for the gentry.
Right. Part two of the interview with Lewis Lapham will appear on next week's show. And the Final Edition Radio Hour will be back in seconds.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, we gotta come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the Final Edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah 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 dot 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 www URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods. When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
Yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Oh, Freckles? Oh, there. Good boy. Yay! What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this dog.
Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Give him a good, Jeff.
Oh, my God, poor Freckles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album, we've got a Twitter feed, we've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling yesterday.
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. Thefinaledition.com. Thefinaledition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get you crazy!
Good job, Freckles! Get him! Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreiser for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No!
Okay, kid, your bus is coming. Now remember to behave, study hard, and for Christ's sake, try and have a little fun.
Okay, Dad.
When I was your age, we knew how to have fun. Kids nowadays, they think they're having fun, but they aren't having fun. Fun isn't Snapchatting. Fun isn't talking about Taylor Swift. I don't even know what the hell that is. But it sure as shit ain't fun. Fun is high-fiving your buds, and fun is finishing a big gulp and making them slurping noises with straw. Yeah, that's fun.
Dad, the bus driver is honking the horn.
Listen, kid. Fun is skinning your knees on the sidewalk. Fun is pissing in a bathroom that reeks of cigarettes. It ain't text messaging. It ain't liking things on Facebook.
The bus driver is waving at us, Dad. I think I should go now.
Fun is saying things like cool and just kidding. It ain't saying things like I need this in my life. You don't need this in your life. And if you do, It's because your life is no goddamn fun.
The bus is driving away, Dad.
Hop in the car. I'll drive you. Me? I'm always having fun. I'm never not having fun. I wake up having fun, and I go to sleep having fun. I'm like a Tibetan monk of fun. I have fun. But you know what? Fun also has me.
You're going the wrong way, Dad.
Fun ain't always about smiling and laughter. No, sir. I have fun when I laugh and when I cry. Even when I'm sobbing or yelling at a factory worker. I'm having fun. When your mom left, I was having fun. When the Jets lose, I have fun.
This is the wrong school, Dad.
Look at these kids walking to school. They're laughing and kidding around, and it looks like they're having fun. But they're lying to themselves. You guys are pathetic! Have some damn fun already!
I think you freaked them out, Dad!
Yeah, look at this couple walking their dog. That dog's no fun. That dog is too small to be fun. A Labrador is fun. A German Shepherd is fun. I don't even know what that dog is.
That's a cat.
But I guarantee you one thing. It isn't an ounce of fun. Your dog's a phony!
You can drop me off here, Dad.
Okay. Go get 'em, kid. Listen to your teachers. But don't forget to... Well, you know.
Have fun?
Yeah! And also, work hard. In my days, we worked our asses off. Working hard is busting your ass and sticking it out. It ain't emailing. I'm always working hard. I'm always having fun. And I'm always having fun working hard. Having fun. Having fun while working hard. I'm a fun-having, hard-working kind of guy. If only I was happy. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a
roof. Jones, get me the Simpson report. The trial's starting any second now.
We interrupt this broadcast with some breaking news. Yemeni forces backed by troops and air cover from the Arab coalition have made advances against rebels in the Marib province. Clashes also raged southwest of the Marib provincial capital.
We interrupt this interruption of this broadcast with some even more breaking news. A kitten is sad on the internet.
Oh my god!
I know.
Well, fuck Yemen then!
Yeah, exactly. And now, back to the broadcast.
And that's the one good thing you can say about the death penalty!
Placidly amid the noise and waste, and remember what comfort there may be in owning a piece thereof. Avoid quiet and passive persons unless you are in need of sleep. Rotate your tires. Speak glowingly of those greater than yourself, and heed well their advice, even though they be turkeys. Know what to kiss and when. Consider the two wrongs never make a right, but the three do. Wherever possible, put people on hold. Be comforted that in the face of all aridity and disillusionment, and despite the changing fortunes of time, there is always a big future in computer maintenance. Remember the Pueblo. Strive at all times to bend, fold, spindle, and mutilate. Know yourself. If you need help, call the FBI. Exercise caution in your daily affairs, especially with those persons closest to you. That lemon on your left, for instance. Be assured that a walk through the ocean of most souls would scarcely get your feet wet. Fall not in love, therefore. It will stick to your face. Gracefully surrender the things of youth, birds, clean air, tuna, Taiwan, and let not the sands of time get in your lunch. Hire people with hooks. For a good time, call 606-4311. Ask for Ken. Take heart amid the deepening gloom that your dog is finally getting enough cheese. And reflect that whatever misfortune may be your lot, it could only be worse in Milwaukee. You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here. And whether you can hear it or not, the universe is laughing behind your back. Therefore, make peace with your God, whatever you conceive him to be, hairy thunderer or cosmic muffin, with all its hopes, dreams, promises, and urban renewal, the world continues to deteriorate. Give up.
You are a fool of the universe. You have no right to be here. Whether you can hear it or not, you and us living behind your back. You are a fool of the universe. You have no right to be here. Whether you can hear it or not, the universe living behind.
Hey, everyone. The documentary about the National Lampoon, Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, opens nationwide on September 25th. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lenk, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Ann Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Abby Parker, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lenk, Leslie Shapira, Kurt Weitzman, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. Deteriorata was voiced by Melissa Manchester and Norman Rose, with music by Christopher Guest. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lenk. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC. Copyright 2015.